You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. I woke up this morning and the first thing I read was a tweet from Donald Trump pretty much just bashing Meryl Streep.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
That's a really bold take there, Steve.
Thank you. That's why you have me for those bold takes here. So you'll never have me back now.
Well, Mike doesn't make those decisions, so don't worry.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
That's very true. I'm very low on the totem pole.
So if for some reason I disappear from the podcast mid-sentence and Mike takes over the rest of the show, you'll know why.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome to episode 183 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Mike Warner. Mike, how you doing?
What's up? This has been kind of an interesting, Monday. We record on Mondays. I mean, Colby Rasmus was just signed to the Rays, and I don't know how to feel about that. I'm kind of happy that we have another, power bat in our lineup, but I woke up this morning and the first thing I read was a tweet from Donald Trump pretty much just bashing Meryl Streep from, her really great speech last night at the Golden Globes. And pretty much all he was saying, was how she doesn't have any talent, which I thought was, pretty odd considering she just got the Lifetime Achievement Award again on the Golden Globe Award. So I just thought that was kind of funny, but it's been kind of interesting today.
It's been interesting for me as well, going through what they are calling the storm of, a couple decades in Northern California. So if for some reason I disappear from the podcast mid-sentence and Mike takes over the rest of the show, you'll know why. It's because I have lost power and can no longer continue to host. So that's just kind of first and foremost. In terms of the whole Meryl Streep thing, I have so much love for Meryl Streep. I actually went to middle school with one of her daughters.
I was going to say with Meryl Streep because, yeah, you're about that old, right?
Thanks, bud. No, with her middle daughter and met her a few times through kind of the drama department and things like that that her daughter was a part of. And she is a fantastic person along with being a fantastic actress. So that's all I'll say on that subject. But tonight we have a fantastic guest that probably doesn't care too much about hearing our viewpoints on Meryl Streep and more our viewpoints on fantasy baseball as a whole. We have Steve Gardner from USA Today joining us. Steve, how are you doing?
Doing great, Justin. How are you and Mike tonight?
We are doing fantastically. Steve, it's fantastic that you could join us. Could you tell people where you could be reached on social media and then what you do over at USA Today?
Okay. You can reach me on Twitter at Steve A. Gardner. And you can also catch me on my Facebook page. It's steve.gardnersports. And you can check that out. Actually, had something that I posted today talking about the Hall of Fame. And, that's kind of outside the realm of fantasy sports, but still something interesting, just to get some discussion together about who I would vote for if I had a ballot for the Hall of Fame. So threw that up there. And of course, you can reach me by looking at the website for USA Today Fantasy Sports, fantasy.usatoday.com.
And I read your Hall of Fame article today. I thought it was a very good piece. I usually do kind of, if I had a vote, though you may actually have a vote at some point, right?
I'm in my 7th year now of in the Baseball Writers Association. You've got to be in there for 10 consecutive years on baseball beat and covering the game. And so I'm going to get, if everything continues the way that it's going, I'll get my first Hall of Fame vote in 2020, which will be the Derek Jeter first year of eligibility. So looking forward to that when that arrives. I think I'll vote for him, by the way.
Well, I get the opportunity. That's a really bold take there, Steve.
Thank you. That's why you have me for those bold takes here. So
is that your team, Steve? Start. The Yankees?
No, not at all. I'm a definite non-Yankee fan. Grew up an Orioles fan in state of Virginia. The Orioles were the team were the local team, and so I've been an Orioles fan, gosh, for as long back to the days of, believe it or not, Jim Palmer and Brooks Robinson and all those guys. So definitely not a Yankees fan.
Yeah, just a little bit after Justin started watching baseball, probably somewhere in there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Meryl Streep was probably an Orioles fan back then.
Thanks, guys. So let's jump right into our list of players that we're going to talk about tonight. We've got a couple different topics we're going to talk about. We'll talk about a couple of recent MLB moves, and we're going to talk some early season NFBC ADPs, and then we're going to talk about some players that are without teams so far that haven't been signed. And I guess we can cross off Rasmus off that list, though I don't think I put him on there, because he did just sign with Tampa Bay. I'm sure we'll cover that later this week. But let's first talk about Jared Dyson, who was traded to Seattle for Nate Carnes. I'll start with you, Steve. What are your thoughts on Jared Dyson now being a Mariner?
Well, I think it's a pretty good move for him, certainly from a fantasy standpoint. He was a fourth outfielder there in Kansas City and would occasionally start. But, I mean, they would play Paulo Orlando over Dyson a lot of times. He'd be a defensive replacement occasionally. But he'd always find a way to get, like, 300 at-bats and get 25 or 30 steals. And that's a valuable fantasy player if you're playing, certainly in an AL-only league. But even in a mixed league, it's a guy that can be useful. I think with the Mariners, he's going to be probably an everyday player, or at least most everyday, because you know they need somebody to start there in left field. Their outfield is just sort of a big jumble right now, and I think he could certainly be an everyday guy. And if you look at his skill set, he's probably the best guy that they have for the leadoff spot. So you take somebody who's playing on a regular basis, put him at the top of the order. You know, it doesn't matter that you know what team it is. You're going to be getting a lot of at bats and a lot of opportunities. I think it's a really good move for him. And I think Dyson is a guy, doesn't hit for a lot of power, obviously, but the fact that he is one of two guys in the major leagues, and I wrote about this today at usatoday.com, two guys in the major leagues to steal 25 or more bases each of the last 5 seasons. So, you know, there's a bar bet you could go in and try and win with your friends. You know, who's the other guy that's stolen at least 25 bases each of the last 5 years? I'll just leave that out there and let that marinate if you guys want.
Let's see, 25 bases in each of the last 5 seasons. It's going to be a name that I would never think of.
No, you will. He's a guy that's going to be a first-round pick this year. But we had fun at the office.
Oh, Altuve.
Yes, we had fun talking about this in the office because he wasn't the first guy that came to mind for a lot of people just because, I don't know, he's one of the most overlooked guys in real baseball, I think. But certainly from a fantasy standpoint, he's definitely not underrated. But yeah, it took a while for the folks in the office to come up with Altuve.
Altuve is my boy. I got a lot of flack prior to last season for ranking him over Bryce Harper going into last season. So I will be.
It turned out pretty well.
Yeah, I'll be forever grateful that one didn't make me look like an idiot. Mike, what are your thoughts on Jared Dyson now in Seattle?
I have, as my first note on Jared Dyson, I have 30-plus stolen bases and a .260 average in 4 of the last 5 seasons. So, you know, Steve pretty much took my first stat. Appreciate it. It's a great debut to the podcast.
Oh dear. You'll never have me back now.
No.
But, well, Mike doesn't make those decisions, so don't worry.
That's very true. I'm very low on the totem pole. But regardless, I love the move for Dyson. He's projected to be their leadoff hitter in Seattle. Kind of like you mentioned, Steve, they really don't have an option. He is a career 266 hitter against right-handed pitching, 328 on base percentage, primarily an eighth or ninth hitter for the Royals here these last few years with them. I will say, you know, Kansas City has been in the top three in stolen base attempts in two of the last 3 years. They were seventh last season, and Seattle was 24th. So maybe they acquired Dyson just to kind of get some more, you know, just a little bit more speed on the base pass, because they really don't have a team that has a lot of speed on the roster. You have Leonis Martin, and, you know, that's pretty much it, other than Gene Segura now since they acquired him. But I really like this move for Dyson. He is somebody that is very underrated in the speed category. Right now, going 84th outfielder, 350th overall in NFBC. I would assume that would trend up as drafts kind of get going here. But regardless, going to be a really cheap source of steals, and really won't hurt you in batting average either. And could, you know, have a good amount of run production as well, hitting on top of a lineup that's still pretty solid. So I really like this move.
Well, he's also one of those guys that I think is overlooked on draft day all the time. And part of that was because he's never really been slated to get a full season of at-bats. If he can get a full season of at-bats, in Seattle, I mean, there may be some platoon issues, so maybe he loses a few at bats, you know, there. But if he can get 500 plate appearances, this is a guy that could easily steal 40 plus bags throughout the throughout the season. So I really like him. I think he's going to be extremely undervalued, even if his price does spike up. They look like they may be trying to promote a little bit more of a running game, considering they did acquire Gene Segura. They now have acquired Jerod Dyson. So this may be a change in philosophy for the team in terms of how much they're willing to steal. So I don't know if they've really ever had the personnel the last couple years, other than Leonis Martin, to actually move across the bases in that fashion. So.
Yeah, and you look to who he has, you know, to compete with. They had Ben Gamel out there in left field for a while, Sean O'Malley. Those guys aren't exactly threatening anybody's playing time. Danny Valencia, I don't know that he's an outfielder really anymore. So it's wide open for him. I think you got to consider him as an everyday player out there in Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think that Valencia should be playing in the outfield anymore, especially with the outfielders they now have. So it wouldn't make much sense to me to take away starts from Dyson and lose that defense in Seattle in order to give Valencia a few more at-bats. He should just, you know, platoon with Vogelbach and maybe, you know, steal a couple extra plate appearances here and there. But nothing regular should be taken away from Dyson from Valencia, in my opinion.
Agreed.
Does anybody care about Nate Karns?
I might a little bit.
go ahead, Steve. Tell me why you have a little bit, and then Mike can jump in after.
All right. I think, first of all, you know, Kansas City is a nice pitcher-friendly ballpark for the most part. The Royals have played good defense. So, I mean, there are those external factors. I think the one thing about Karns, though, is he's had the last two seasons, you know, playing with Tampa Bay and also with Seattle. He's had almost the exact same fielding independent pitching. It was 4.15 last year and 4.10 the year before that, or flip flop, one or the other. But the ERAs for him, you know, 2 years ago it was 3.67 in Tampa Bay. Last year 5.15. So what is it? You know, he's been either really lucky, really unlucky. I think there's some skills there, and you look at the fact that he does have a career strikeout per nine rate over nine. And so, you know, that to me indicates a guy who can miss bats. The problem for him has been all the walks, and that's what's gotten him in trouble, and that's really, you know, what inflated the ERA considerably last year, because his walk rate went up so high. I think he's one of those guys that if he can figure out and going to a new team sometimes does this, where you get a different set of eyes, a different pitching coach, you move to one side of the rubber or do something like that, a different catcher. You know, maybe it's the difference of Sal Perez being able to frame pitches better or something like that. If he can cut that walk rate down, that's the one skill that he needs to maybe be a relevant pitcher in and maybe even in mixed leagues. I wouldn't go so far as to draft him, I don't think, in a mixed league, but he's somebody to keep in mind who could be. You know, if Ian Kennedy can be a viable starter in Kansas City and not be that good, I think Nate Karns could be better than that.
Nice burn on Ian Kennedy. Mike, what are your thoughts on
Nate
Karns?
He's burned me a few times, too.
Me as well. What are your thoughts on Nate Karns, Mike?
Yeah, don't speak badly about Ian Kennedy. He's a legend last season. No, I'm just kidding. But I think this is interesting. First off, I mean, again, Steve, you know, with the ballpark factors, the Kauffman Stadium was tied for first in home run suppression for right-handed batters over the last 3 years. And, you know, last season, Karns gave up a 305, 377, 497 line to right-handed batters. That equated to an 875 OPS. That certainly is going to help. I love that Kansas City tends to go to their bullpen, fairly early and not really lengthen their starters outings. And Nate Karns, let's go through the lineups here. I mean, this has been something that's always been a bugaboo for him. First time through the lineup, 3 ERA, 8.6 K per 9, 1.3 whip. And the second time through the order, 1.9 ERA, again, a 9 K per 9, and a 1.27 whip. Third time through the order, 12.7 ERA, 12 K per 9, 2 whip, and 2 home runs per 9 as well. So the third time through the order has always been a problem for Nate Karns, and this is his career line. This isn't just last season. So the fact that Kansas City, you know, all of the things that, you know, Gardner mentioned as well, just having possibly a new catcher in Salvador Perez, a better ballpark, and a team that might be willing to cut him out earlier than, you know, possibly, you know, he's been cut out earlier in his career, could yield to some pretty decent fantasy production, and he's absolutely free. I mean, he's outside the top 450, the 125th starter on the board, absolutely free. They don't have a lot of options in Kansas City. You have guys, at least right now, penciled in like, you know, Matt Stram. I don't even know who that guy is. Jason Vargas is still a long shot for, you know, any type of meaningful innings. Chris Young, Mike Minor, there's just not a lot of guys that we can depend on here. And at least Nate Karns has shown the ability to miss bats, you know, a 10% or more swing strike rate in each of his, first 4 years of any type of major league exposure. Steve said, if he kind of can cut down on the walks and doesn't have to go through the lineup a third time, he might see a little bit of, you know, fantasy, you know, goodness here.
Well, I mean, I don't know why you're disparaging the name of Matt Stram.
Maybe because I don't know the name. I honestly don't. I'm willing to say I have no idea who he is.
It's a good segue for me to know.
Yeah, joining us now also is our prospect guy, Matt Thompson. He can talk about Matt Stram because he is a prospect for Kansas City that came up late last year. Matt, what are your thoughts on Nate Karns? And then if you want to talk about Matt Stram, you can go ahead and mention him as well.
Well, I think they're kind of tied in. I mean, I like Karns in Kansas City. I'm a little bit worried about the back injury last year that slowed him down. He had a really good start to the year in Seattle. His only year there, and got out of the gates good. Had a back injury and then kind of just fell apart and lost a lot of his second half was miserable until he shut it down. We said a lot of things there, but the thing with bringing in Karns is I hope it doesn't cost Matt Stram his rotation spot, because I think he might go there. But now I think he might be the guy bumped to the bullpen because he did so well for them last year. But I think he's a long-term starter, a guy that can get you over a K an inning. He's in a good ballpark. I mean, I think Matt Stram, he's a guy in dynasty leagues I'm trying to scoop up wherever I can. I think he's a starter going forward. I just hope they use him that way in this year.
Yeah, I was kind of sad to see Karns get moved over to Kansas City because Stram was going to be a guy on my sleeper lists for this season as a, you know, really cheap option, even in AL-only leagues. But if Karns bumps him out of the rotation, he loses a lot of his value. But Stram is a guy I really, really like as an under-the-radar guy. Pitching in a great stadium, showed some pretty nice upside last season out of the bullpen with over 12 Ks per 9, under 2 ERA out of the bullpen. So obviously those numbers come up a little bit pitching in the rotation, but I think he's a guy who could probably get about 9 to 10 strikeouts per 9 at the major league level as a starter. So he's definitely an underrated guy to keep track of during spring training, because I'm sure he'll be in kind of the fight for that last rotation spot with Carnes and some other guys.
Yeah, I think he probably starts the year in the bullpen. I think they did the same thing with Yordano Ventura, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me. Well, and they did the same thing with Finnegan before trading Finnegan over to Cincinnati. So
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that's where he starts. I do think long-term he is the starter, but we'll see.
All right, let's go ahead and move over to the other trade that happened. Involves one of these teams, Seattle, trading Seth Smith over to Baltimore for Yvonne Gallardo. Start with you, Steve. What are your thoughts on Seth Smith in Baltimore and Gallardo in Seattle?
Well, for Gallardo, I think my thoughts are pretty short and sweet. I don't think he's usable as a fantasy player. I think he's done, and he's just going to go over there and eat innings for the Mariners, if possible. His ERA was over 5 last year. WHIP was over 1.5. I think he's no longer usable. Doesn't strike anybody out. There's not a whole lot more to say about Gallardo. And I liked him, you know, back when he was with the Brewers and he was striking out more guys. I thought he was going to have a long, nice long career. He may have a long career, but certainly not as effective as what it looked like he was going to be when he was really thought of as the Brewers' ace back a few years ago.
Then what about Seth Smith in Baltimore? Do you think he has a decent role there?
Yeah, I don't know if the Orioles are done yet. That's the one thing. I mean, I think they've covered themselves to some degree, but he doesn't really move the needle for me there. I mean, they've got Hyun-Soo Kim, who's probably going to start in left field, and Smith is going to start in right field against right-handed pitchers, and they'll have a Joey Rickard or somebody like that, you know, go in and swap with them. I don't think he really moves the needle. I mean, some decent power, sure, but he's one of those guys that's just there. It's going to be a dime a dozen outfielder and will probably be available on waiver wires, and you'll pick him up when he starts to get hot, and then he'll cool off, and he just doesn't do a whole lot for me. And I'm an Orioles fan, so I would love for him to turn into to gold, but at this point, I'm not really excited about the possibilities.
Matt, do either of these guys move the needle for you?
No, I think immediately after the trade, I tweeted out, I think Smith gains a little marginal value going to Baltimore, being better park. And, I mean, obviously, I think he's still limited to the strong side of a platoon. But like Steve said, I think Baltimore probably adds somebody else. But as I tweeted about Gallardo, I said he's not even usable for me moving to Seattle. So I'm done with that. Everything shows a complete collapse. No strikeouts anymore. He's homer prone, and he's even Baltimore going to Seattle. But I still don't think that saves him enough for me.
Mike, you interested in either guy?
Out on Gallardo for all the reasons these guys have mentioned. I am not out on Seth Smith, though. I really like this move. He, you know, from an OPS and ISO perspective against right-handed pitchers over the last 4 seasons, which omits all of his Colorado time, he's been a top 60 hitter. And, I mean, at least as of right now, no, they haven't. I don't think they're finished either, the Orioles, but he's projected to hit second for them. You know, the Orioles have been, you know, top 4 in home runs as a team every single year since 2011. Including 3 first place finishes. Camden Yards has the second highest park factor for left-handed batters in terms of home runs. I really like this move. I mean, no, is he going to be like a 30 home run guy? Absolutely not. I don't think he'll get the playing time for that. But in AL only, and as a pretty much, you know, free guy at this point, I think that he can certainly hit 20 to, you know, 25 home runs and hit, you know, somewhere in the vicinity of, you know, 260 or so. Again, gaining the majority of his at bats against righties. So I really like this move a ton. Again, more of an AL only play or really deep mixed formats, but I really like this Seth Smith, especially in Baltimore.
Yeah, I'm completely out on Gallardo, so I won't even mention anything other than that. You know, in terms of Seth Smith, I really like this move for all the reasons that Mike said. The problem is what Matt and Steve have both mentioned is I don't think that they're done. And I think while I would love to see a guy like Chris Carter or Mike Napoli end up in Baltimore, I think they're more likely to sign an outfielder, so a Jose Bautista, a Michael Saunders, or a Mark Trumbo, because I think they want to give Trey Mancini some shot. at proving. So filling up the DH role and first base probably isn't in his best interest and team's best interest. I think it's in their best interest to go out and get an outfielder. And so to me, that will clog and make it a little bit more muddy. If we're getting to opening day and Seth Smith is still projected as their opening day right fielder, then I might start getting a little more interesting, especially if they haven't added anybody. But at this point, I'm operating under the assumption that they will get someone that will carve a huge chunk out of any playing time that he's really projected to get. I agree with Steve. I think this is a move more to cover their bases than anything else. Plus, get rid of Gallardo out of their rotation, who is just a drag on everything. Let's go ahead and move into our next topic. We're going to talk about some guys in their early season NFBC ADPs. I want to know if there's any specific players you are targeting based on these early season ADPs, or if there's any you're fading. I'll start with you, Steve. Any guys that you're specifically targeting because you think they're going too low?
Well, the latest ADPs that I saw, some names jumped out at me. Jose Abreu at 62 seems a little bit far down, and I know you can look and say, you can get a first baseman anytime, and there are lots of really good ones if you don't get to, you know, one at the top of the draft. I think Abreu is getting overlooked, and he's been so consistent for the most part, and I like the fact that, you know, he's still with the White Sox, a good home run hitter's park. I think at 62 overall, that seems like a pretty decent slot for him in the fifth round or something like that if you don't get a first baseman early. So I like him. Another guy I like is Anthony Rendon at 89. And I'll always be high on Anthony Rendon, whether I'm drafting him too early the way I did most of the time last year. But I just think he's such a pure hitter. I get to see him a lot playing for the Nationals. I watch pretty much most of their games, either in person or on television. And I just love the way he makes contact and puts the bat on the ball, and the ball jumps off his bat. I think if Dusty Baker lets him run, he could put up a fantastic season. So those are the two guys I'll give you guys some opportunity to talk to. But those are the guys that jumped out at me first for guys that I really think are being undervalued so far. And in terms of overvalued, Jonathan Villar is another guy that I think will go back and forth a lot on this preseason. Was last year a fluke? Can he continue to do that? Will he continue to hit and get on base as well as he did? I think for the numbers that he put up last year, the last I saw, he was at 20 for his ADP. I just think that's just too much for a guy that doesn't have a track record to draft him in the second round. You know, even though he does have a lot of speed and will steal a lot of bases, I think that's too high. I don't think I will take him at all unless he falls another round or two.
Yeah, I really like a couple of these calls of yours. You know, first, Jose Abreu is a guy that I think is extremely underrated. I know he had, you know, a down season, but it wasn't that bad. And one of the things I've been kind of saying all season is I think first base is one of the weaker positions that we care about in fantasy. I think there is an elite tier. I think he is kind of the bottom end of that elite tier. And then I think there's a huge drop off. And so he's a guy that I'm targeting and that I am ending up with in a lot of mocks because I feel like he's probably going a round or two too late for what kind of value he can offer, especially if he ends up in a better situation team-wise if the White Sox decide they want to get even younger than they already have. And then Villar is a guy that I completely agree with you. I loved him last year, and you know, his biggest cheerleaders on this show, I'm sure Michael want to say something because he was, you know, probably one of his biggest cheerleaders in the industry going into drafts last year. But 20 seems just outrageously high to me. And I think this is an overreaction, and we see these every year to some sort of theme. And last year was starting pitching. Everybody took starting pitching way too high because there was this, this predominant thought within the industry that you wanted to get two kind of studs to anchor a rotation, and people took pitching, you know, a little bit too high, and a lot of people got burnt. by it last year, including myself. And this year, I think the theme is everybody wants speed really early. They want to lock down speed because they feel like they can't get any speed late. And while there's some truth to that, I think players like VR are getting overdrafted. So, yeah, 20 to me for a guy who has had issues being consistent in the past seems pretty excessive, especially from the power standpoint. I don't know if he can keep up what he showed last year. Mike or Matt, do you want to chime in on any of these guys that Steve mentioned?
I'll let Mike step in and defend his boy. I'll let Mike defend his boy VR.
Okay. Well, how dare you guys besmirch Jonathan VR? I mean, he's the absolute greatest baseball player of our time. I mean, I don't know how anybody know, but he's.
I walked right into that, didn't I?
I've mentioned this to you. I know for sure, Justin, but I think that his 20th overall tag is insane, especially for as much as I loved him last year, and screw saying everybody in the industry, I was the highest on VR in the industry. I don't think I heard anybody talking him up as much as I did. There's no way I would pay a 20th pick for him. So, I won't, hurt you guys too much for saying that. I definitely will not own him anywhere. But a few of the guys, I'm just going to kind of, we will get the opportunity to go through all of our positions. So, everybody will get a good grasp of, what we like or don't like. But I really like a few of the Royals skill position guys and where they're going in drafts. Eric Hosmer, for instance, was going, 63rd last year in NFBC ADP. This year going 105, as the 11th first baseman. I completely disagree with that. And I will have Eric Hosmer on a number of my teams, if not all of them, based on this. His price. He's still in the prime of his career and has a lot of, I think a lot of upside still left in there, especially in the power department. Mike Moustakas is another guy that I think people are going to forget about, and he is going insanely low, 206 overall, and, as the 19th first baseman, right next to Nick Castellanos, who is also a massive bargain. But I love him, and I also love Lorenzo Cain this year as well. I was one of the, biggest doubters of Lorenzo Cain coming into last season based on health, but this year you don't have to pay for it. He's at 132 overall on the 30th outfielder. That has upside written all over it in terms of being able to steal bases, and all he has to do is stay relatively healthy. And I think that that's something that he can certainly do, even though it's not something that he's had a track record of doing. A couple of guys other than Jonathan VR I'm down on, certainly Gary Sanchez, even though I love him to death and I have him, pretty much in every keeper league besides a few, going in the top 50. There's no way I take a catcher that high, even though he has massive home run upside. I feel like this is another, Kyle Schwarber, kind of example from last season, going on here. So, I just wanted to really bring up him and, just say that don't do it. It's way too high. I would rather go with Posey earlier if you're going to go with a catcher there.
Steve, any thoughts on the guys Mike mentioned?
Yeah, I was just going to say I'm along the lines of just talking about Kyle Schwarber. I think he's going a little too high, too. I saw his ADP was 70, and the fact that we don't know what the Cubs outfield situation is going to be, how much he's going to play at all. The skills are there, but what have we seen him do in the major leagues? One playoff, the playoff series 2 years ago, and then the World Series this year. I think that's taken a huge leap of faith to have Kyle Schwarber at number 70 overall.
I'm glad you said that, because I'm the biggest driver of he's the most overrated player in fantasy train right now. He is.
Yeah.
He lost the catcher position eligibility, unless you play in Weird Yahoo, which he probably still might have it, which I could see it then. But, I mean, we as far as we know, he could be a platoon bat. I mean, he hasn't really proven he can hit lefties in the major leagues. So yes, he can hit righties, and that's awesome, and that's the strong side of the at-bats. But, I mean, he might be taken out late in the games on defense and losing that bat here and there a week or two, and, I mean, that'll add up.
So. Yeah, and I think that, to me, is one of the biggest issues, is defensively he's a huge liability out there. And there is no DH in the National League, at least at this point. And so he's going to get replaced late in games when it's close. There are going to be platoon issues, or there at least appear there may be platoon issues. I just don't know how he gets to 600 plate appearances or even 500 plate appearances throughout the year. To me, it seems like the ceiling is capped because of his defense and his platoon issues. So that, to me, is one of the reasons why I'm out on Schwarber, especially considering where he's going. Matt, do you have a couple guys for us?
I got a couple, and to be no surprise, I mean, I think Rich Hill at 137 is too low. Yes, I understand all the concerns. Last year was a blister thing. I'm not betting on the blisters repeating itself this year. It's a risk, but I think it's when he's healthy, you're getting a number two starter, maybe even number one in the fantasy realm with all the strikeouts. He's in a perfect situation in L.A. It's a bit risky. And then again, that kind of fits in with my next guy, Lance McCullers at 198. I think that's a high strikeout upside. At that shot at 198, I mean, if you're thinking you could take the risk there and it won't hurt you too much as long as you get a little bit of safer options in front of him. And a guy I'm going out on a limb for a little bit is Keon Broxton at 200. Yes, he makes the contact percentage is a little down. He's going to cap your batting average. I mean, if he hits 260, that's a huge win. But I think he's a guy that if he gets the playing time and with how much Milwaukee runs, I think he's an easy bet for 25 steals, and I wouldn't be shocked at 15 to 20 homers with the line drive rate that surged. He was really good in July on regular season when he made his swing adjustments that were well chronicled. So I think he's a guy with potential 20-20 upside, and with the stolen bases going to be a lot more. And I think at 200, that's a bargain. You're looking at a guy, he's like Carlos Gomez light, and Carlos Gomez a couple years ago was going in the first round. He's got a similar package. And the guy that's too high for my blood is Giancarlo Stanton at 37. The injuries keep adding up. It's always soft tissue injuries for me, and that's weird. I don't trust that, and that's too high of a gamble for me on Stanton and Schwarber, like you guys already mentioned.
Yeah, I'm going to throw out a couple guys, and then I'll let everybody kind of chime in on guys they haven't had the ability to yet. Most of the guys that I was going to target in this conversation have been taken, so I'll kind of do one I like and one I dislike. One I dislike is from my own team, the San Francisco Giants, and that's Eduardo Nunez, going 117th overall. I mean, this is a guy that has never really been able to establish full-time playing time. He may end up doing that in San Francisco, and the speed could be there, but I doubt the power is. And, I mean, he's going ahead of guys like Addison Russell, Aledmys Diaz, Brad Miller. And to me, that seems too high. I mean, I know he can steal bases, but the Giants as a team don't tend to steal a ton of bases. I wonder if he – right now he's projected to bat second in the order, but he's had some platoon issues the last few years. And I think on the short side of the platoon, you could see him batting towards the bottom of the lineup, which would drastically affect his numbers. I think his price tag is the seventh shortstop off the board, 117th overall, is drastically overrated. I'm going to chime in real quick on Rich Hill, because I know, Matt, you said that you thought he was a good buy. I think he's a bad buy. This is an argument I think we'll continue to have throughout the offseason. But the fact that Rich Hill... while he offers some elite production when he's healthy, if you're playing in anything deeper than a 12-team format, I think you have to worry about his health really costing you innings. And in NL only, in a 15-team mix, you really need those innings to accumulate. It doesn't help when you can't go to the waiver wire and pick up someone to replace him. So for me, in that reason, I'd rather have a guy who has similar health issues and you can get him 70 picks later in Steven Matz. You may not get the as elite production, but you're going to get him a number of picks later. You're going to get elite production while he's in. And I'd feel more comfortable thinking Matz will make it through an entire season than Rich Hill personally for me. Guys that I like at their ADP, I'm going to go back to the well. I know Mike will probably try to beat me up over it. It's Gerrit Cole going 118th off the board, 28th starter, going behind Julio Teheran in the Matt Harvey area. And that, to me, seems a little ridiculous. This is a guy that I think a lot of us thought may be a top 10 pitcher last season, had a down year, but I'm not going to downgrade him that much. I really like what I've seen from Gerrit Cole in his short career, and I think he can push back up towards being an elite starter in this league. All right, Steve, I'll let you chime in first on any of the guys that we've talked about.
A couple of them. This can be a fascinating discussion on Rich Hill. I think you hit the nail on the head, Justin, when you said depending on the size of your league, because if there's replacement possibilities, and you can stream pitchers in Hill's spot when he's on the disabled list or he's skipping starts or whatever, I think he can be a huge asset. And the thing is, we have the disabled list now with the 10-day disabled list versus 15. It might make it a little bit easier for teams to put players that are injury prone or need to skip a start on the DL and make it make it for fantasy owners to have them plan ahead a little bit better. So you can kind of see what might happen. And again, this is a little bit of speculation, but something to keep in mind. If you can stream a pitcher in that spot, you've got Rich Hill's elite production for, let's just say, two-thirds of the season. And if you can put some good matchups into that pitching slot, adding on to that, you could have yourself an excellent pitcher in that roster spot. So Hill is going to be fascinating this year. And I want to agree 100% with what Matt said about Keon Broxton. I was in a mock draft not too long ago, maybe a couple of weeks ago. And the same thing that we were talking about earlier, about how you get speed early and you can't find it late. Broxton is one of those guys that you can find late. And I was waiting on him and I was ready to pounce, and somebody took him out from right from under me. So I think you've got to be aware that a lot more people, and we're contributing to it right now, are going to be aware of Keon Broxton and his ability to steal bases. So be on the lookout for him. You may have to go a little bit earlier than you planned to get him.
I think another obvious guy, too, is Eric Thames from the Brewers. I think he's going super late. I don't know how long that lasts. He's getting a lot of helium now with all those, excuse my language, but batshit projections that we've seen about him. So I think those are, I mean, honestly, I think they're nuts. I think I'm probably the high guy on him, too, and I think those projections are crazy. But, I mean, a first baseman that can steal 10 to 12 bags and hit 20 to 30 homers and hit 250, 260 is worth a lot nowadays at that position. So the extra steals will make up for a little bit of lacking batting average. So if you can take the shot there, I would there, too.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, we're going to have a ton of arguments throughout the offseason on Eric Thames, because especially on Friends of Fantasy Benefits, there's a huge like variety of thoughts on where he should be going in drafts, what he projects out to be. And to me, like, that is who Eric Thames is before we actually get to see him play in a major league uniform again, is we have no idea what he's going to be. He could be a guy that, like you said, hits, you know, 20 to 30 home runs, you know, steals 10 to 15 bags, or he could be a guy that, you know, hits 220 and doesn't have a role anymore. And so, like, I understand, like, you know, right now the NFBC ADP on him has him super low. But that's because a lot of those drafts, or at least a good portion of those drafts that count into that ADP, happened before he signed. You know, so to me, I some people have been saying that he's been going around the 150 mark overall, which would place him around, you know, kind of in between Albert Pujols and Adrian Gonzalez in, you know, as the 14th or 13th first baseman off the board. That to me is insanely high, and not a guy I'd be willing to take a shot on. I love Keon Broxton too. I mentioned it, I think, a number of times last year. He's a guy that I think offers some interesting value. I wanted to say one more thing on Rich Hill before I throw it over to Mike for the kind of the final thoughts on these guys. Is that if you're in like a dynasty or a keeper league draft, I was just in a dynasty league mock draft, which I'll be writing up for Fangraphs probably this week. And in it, I was able to get Rich Hill in the 15-team league, the 17th round. So, like, to me, like, that is where you can get some value on Rich Hill, is where, you know, and where you can get value on a lot of these older guys that may be a little bit underrated because of their age. Is in dynasty league, startup drafts, keeper league drafts, you get that discount, and that's where I'll take it. You know, and I may own Rich Hill in a league or two because of that. Mike, what are your thoughts on the guys that were mentioned?
There's just so many guys. There's so much going on right now. I don't know what to say. My head's spinning. We could probably talk about this forever. I'll just say this. You know, fantasy every year is all relative to value. And as much as I was down on Garrett Cole last year, I am completely back in this season. So that's two examples on this very show that I'm talking about, or that I'm saying, between Garrett Cole and Lorenzo Cain, who I was, you know, very, very much not in on in 2016, that I'm going back to the well on this year. Garrett Cole, was the 35th overall pick last season, and now he's going almost as the 30th overall starter in NFBC draft. So I think that's just something that needs to correct itself. And as far as Rich Hill, you and I already talked about him pretty extensively on the Dodgers preview, Justin, so I don't really need to get, more into it. But I do like, his skills. I think that he is, whenever he is on the field, he's going to be completely fine. And I think that your take is the best one. Depending on your league size and what, how much that roster spot matters to you, that should weigh into whether you want to acquire a Rich Hill for your team or not. Just a couple other starters just to, throw out there. I really like some of these guys going in the later rounds. Vincent Velasquez has unlimited upside, and we saw that in a few instances last year. I think that going as almost the 200 pick is a great value for him. Lance McCullers has already been mentioned. I do want to say, like, Drew Pomeranz and Jeff Samardzija, they're going right next to each other, and I know there's been a lot of talk about Pomeranz starting off in the bullpen. I actually would kind of prefer that, because then it kind of limits his innings, and then people are completely off of him, at least to begin the season. And people tend to forget that it's a marathon. It's a 6 month long grind that we have to go through. And if Pomeranz is usable as a starter for 4 months of the season, even though it's not the first two, that still provides meaningful value for us as fantasy owners. So I really like a couple of those guys later on. There's more and more to keep going with, but in general, there's a few guys that I'm certainly gonna go back to the well on this year that I was kind of lower on, Zach Greinke being another option. So it's just going to be something that you have to kind of correct after, some of them had really bad seasons in 2016.
All right, let's jump into our final topic. We'll probably move through these guys a little bit quicker just because we're running up on time. But I want to talk about some players that don't have teams yet. So some guys haven't signed. This is one of those years where it seems like there's a plethora of talent still out there. And some guys may even have trouble finding teams, especially at the prices they expected to get signed. So I want to talk about, let's start with Mark Trumbo. Steve, what are your thoughts on Mark Trumbo not having a team? If you've got an early season draft, are you willing to pay the price on him?
I think because of the skills that he offers, I don't think that his location where he ends up is as big a deal as it may be somewhere else. He's going to most likely start and play, on a fairly regular basis. I think if you need home runs, and it's like a common theme of the guys that are out there still, you need home runs. You can get them from these guys, but you're going to have to pay the price in terms of batting average. In some cases, I'm willing to do that. It just depends on what the makeup of my team is. I'm not going to take Mark Trumbo in the third round or anything like that. I think he's going to be a mid-round kind of pick, especially if he's still unsigned. But wherever he lands, he's going to hit home runs, and you just have to, take that into account when you try and construct your roster to compete in the batting average category.
He's currently going as around the 56th pick in NFBC leagues. Do you think that is about right, or too high, too low?
Yeah, I think that's about right. I don't have any qualms. I can't say that I would take him much earlier than that, but if he's still around on the board at in the fifth round somewhere in there, I think I would look and consider him heavily.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Mark Trumbo not having a spot? Would you take him at the 56th overall pick?
I personally would not take him at the 56 overall pick, but I also have a bias against guys that don't walk. So that's something I need to look at myself about and change. But, he's going ahead of guys like Yoenis Cespedes, Ian Desmond, Cargo, Gregory Polanco. You can make an argument that all those guys should go higher. Justin Upton. I think the thing with Trumbo, too, is I don't even care if he ends up back in Baltimore. He's not hitting 47 homers again next year. And I think if he drops that down to about 35, 36, that you're losing a decent amount of value because you're losing 10, 11 home runs. I hope, and another thing too that I want to look for is I hope he goes somewhere I still think if I had to bet on it, I'd pick Baltimore for him to end up. But I mean, I hope he goes somewhere where he gets to play first base and kind of deepen that pool up a little bit more. But yeah, I think 56 is a little bit too high for me there.
Mike, Trumbo at 56.
I'm not in on Trumbo at 56. The teams that have been involved, at least in the discussion of getting somebody like Trumbo, have been the Rangers, Mariners, Athletics, and Rockies. I mean, we can all salivate at the possibility of him going to the Rockies, just like another guy that we're going to talk about later in the show. But regardless, he had a career high in runs and RBIs last season. I think that's where a ton of his value came from. He's been somebody that's always hit for power, but the 26% home run to fly ball rate at home was insanely high compared to his previous seasons, especially 15%, 15%, 20%, 16%. So if he doesn't get the benefit of hitting in a home ballpark that's as good as Camden Yards, then yes, you will see a natural downtick in home runs. But his 411 foot average home run distance was tied for first in all of baseball last year. And, he had the most occurrences with 110-mile-an-hour exit velocity of any other hitter. So the power plays anywhere, that's not what I'm worried about. I just think naturally the runs and RBIs will regress if he goes to another team. And, on top of that, he just can't hit the curve. Of his 47 home runs last season, six of them were against a breaking ball. So he's still, that contact rate will never, get above, 72 to 75%. And he will never be a batting average asset. So you're automatically kind of paying a top 60 price on a guy that's essentially, Chris Carter in some ways.
Yeah, and that's my whole issue. I know he offers elite power, but he has serious contact issues. I'm not worried about where he ends up because, like we saw with K-Riss Davis moving from Milwaukee to Oakland last year, real power plays, and he's one of those guys with real man power. Like, it doesn't matter where he plays, he's going to hit home runs and probably a bunch of them. For me, he doesn't walk, so he's not that interesting in OBP formats, or he doesn't get the bump in OBP formats that you get from some power guys, and his average can be kind of a drain. And I can get that with Chris Carter, who we'll be talking about in a little bit, much later in drafts. I think 56 overall for me is just too high, especially considering some of the outfielders that Matt mentioned going behind him, Justin Upton, Carlos Gonzalez, Ian Desmond, Gregory Polanco, all guys I'd be interested in over Mark Trumbo. Let's move on to the next guy on this list, and that is Chris Carter, who got DFA'd to make room for Eric Thames. There have been rumors that he could be ending up in a place like Colorado, which I think would make everybody happy. But at this point, I think he's probably got to wait for other guys to sign to kind of see where he can fit. Matt, what are your thoughts on Chris Carter?
Much as what we just talked about with Trumbo, except he's going at a very, very better looking spot. He's got the power, like you said, the manpower that can hit it out of anywhere. He's not going to be a batting average drain, but in OBP leagues, he's actually better than Trumbo in that aspect. It all depends on where he goes and if he's going to get regular at-bats, which at this point in the season, you can't really bank on it. It's kind of musical chairs. You got a couple guys we're going to talk about later, Bautista and Napoli. You got guys like Brandon Moss that are out there that are looking for jobs, and they all kind of have the similar skill set. Somebody's going to get left without a job. I don't think it'll be Carter, but I do think Carter probably ends up maybe a couple million a year to be a bench bat or a part-time DH, and I think that would severely dampen the value. But, I mean, say he ends up somewhere, it doesn't matter where he ends up. If he gets playing time, he's gonna hit 30 to 40 homers. It's just you don't know what else you're going to get except for low batting averages.
Steve, what are your thoughts on Chris Carter?
I'm not as excited about him. I think the problem with Carter versus Trumbo is that I think Trumbo is good enough and decent enough in the field if he has to play the field, and first base is a much better position for him than the outfield, that he can continue to play even if he goes through a major slump. I think with Carter, the thing with him, he started out really, really well, and his batting average was over 250. He was hitting for a pretty high average in April and May. And then when he started to return to being Chris Carter, the one that we all knew at the second half of the season, and his batting average started cratering, it was still high enough that people were saying, oh, well, he's hitting 240. Oh, he's hitting 230. He could give you another one of those 199 seasons very easily. And if he gets off to a bad start, he could also lose a lot of playing time. So I think Chris Carter's playing time is in serious jeopardy, depending on where he signs, obviously. And yeah, the power is there. I just don't think you can count on it as much as you can on Mark Trumbo. So I'm, even at the reduced price, I'm not as high on Carter as I am on Trumbo.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Chris Carter?
Yeah, I'm a little bit higher on Carter. He's, you know, he's pretty much like Adam Dunn, right? Like, I mean, since he's, you know, pretty much gotten full time at bat since 2013, you know, he's had a 12% walk rate or better in three of the four seasons. 251 ISO during that time is eighth among all hitters in baseball. 131 home runs are tied for sixth among all hitters in baseball during that time. I mean, he's second in fly ball percentage at almost 50%. Yes, he does have the worst strikeout rate among any hitter since that time as well at 33%, but he deserves to land a job somewhere and he deserves to be on fantasy rosters. Definitely gets a, you know, bump in OBP formats, or and deservedly so because of the walk rate, but you're never counting on him for batting average anyways. And if you can pencil in 30 plus home runs, that's something I'm in for, especially past pick 200. So I like Carter.
Yeah, I mean, I've been an outspoken backer of Chris Carter. It's not changing no matter where he ends up. I mean, obviously his value will change one way or another depending on playing time. But I think after putting up 41 home runs last season, some team is going to give him a chance to have full time at bats. It's just a matter of where he ends up. But I think he has to wait for probably Napoli and Mark Trumbo to sign, because I think they're kind of clogging the market at this point. So he may end up having to wait. But if he could end up in a place like Baltimore, a place like Colorado, or even, you know, even a place with a worse stadium, I think he'll be fine as long as he does have the playing time carved out, which I assume he will. But even if he doesn't, if you've got an early draft, I take the gamble on him, because that's 30 to 40 home runs, and you're not having to pay the price tag that we had to pay 2 years ago for him. Right now, he is the 18th first baseman off the board, 224th overall. If that pick doesn't work out, it's not killing you, but the upside is there. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about Jose Bautista, who at this point has said he will sign a one-year contract as long as it's over the amount of the qualifying offer. Steve, what are your thoughts on Jose Bautista for next year?
I've loved Bautista for a long time. I love the way that he plays. But the fact that he's striking out more now and he's not hitting as many home runs, it's troubling. And in last season, I think we're looking at him at age 35. We're looking at him at the point where eventually players fall off in terms of their production. I think he's on the cusp of that. And I don't expect him to be able to play a full season this season like you know, he didn't last year, only 116 games. I think he would be in a good situation as a part-time guy or semi-regular guy to use that DH spot so he doesn't have to play in the field. But yeah, he's one of those. I think he has a very high opinion of himself, and it may be a little bit too high, and that's why he's still out there on the market right now.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Jose Bautista?
I think I smell it. Do you guys smell it? I can smell it. The Rays and Jose Bautista, you know, reuniting, I can definitely see that happening at some point. Because who wants him? Who honestly wants Jose Bautista right now? Like, I can't find anybody. You guys tell me if there's somebody that actually wants him. But, you know, the Orioles are out. The Red Sox seem like they're out. The Rays are still, I mean, I think they're kind of in, but the Blue Jays are out. You know, maybe the Phillies, but they've also been said to, you know, not be interested as well. You know,
Mike, you can call me a homer all you want, but doesn't it make logical sense that Jose Bautista signs to play in San Francisco? They need a left fielder.
No, you want to know why? Because
they don't care about defense, because they've run guys like Brandon Belt out there. They like old guys.
Got to keep that first round pick. Their system's
no,
going.
I mean, as much as the Giants, as much as the Giants don't care about defense, he's been bottom five in UZR in the outfield over the last two seasons, only in front of my I add Andrew McCutchen, Charlie Blackman, Gerardo Parra, and Matt Kemp. Those are the only guys that have been worse.
Dude, they ran out defense. Michael Morse for a full year and re-signed him to a minor league deal this year.
Well, that is true. He could be an upgrade over Mike Morse. But regardless, Bautista is the guy that, looking at ADP last season, was going in the top 30. And because of, toe injury, leg injury, just overall, didn't have a great season. He's now being the 26th outfielder being taken outside of the top 115 picks. I'm willing to take a shot on him again. The power number, the underlying metrics might not be 40 home run power now, but I still think that a 30 plus home run campaign is certainly in the cards, no matter where he plays. I hate Jose Bautista as a person, so I hate that I'm even recommending him as an actual fantasy play, but 36 is not too old for him to hit 30 home runs and accumulate 100 RBIs. He still is somebody that is elite in terms of OBP formats, 16% walk rate or better in each of the last three seasons. If you trend it back to 2010, he's had a 15 plus walk rate in every season except for 2013. Still, holds the strikeouts in check. There's a lot to like with Jose Bautista, and I think him being on a one-year deal somewhere and being healthy will actually motivate him to try and get maybe a 2 or 3 year deal from somebody like maybe the Yankees, which that would be like the worst deal of my life. But regardless, I think that there's a lot that can go right for Bautista this season.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Bautista?
Mike pretty much covered it. I mean, everyone doesn't like Bautista, but I think on a one-year deal for a team that already gave up a draft pick to sign a player, I think he makes sense. He might not really fit that well because the defense is horrid, but I mean, in the National League, the Cardinals just signed Fowler and gave up a first round pick. I think Bautista would fit pretty well as a part time left fielder, part time first baseman kind of guy in that lineup because they could use some thunder. But I mean, I don't think obviously it's not going to happen, but I mean, a deal like that would be good for him to land. I mean, the OBP has always been remained high since he transformed himself in Toronto. Yeah, you have a lot of extra baggage, but I mean, if he stays healthy, I don't see any reason why he won't produce for at least one year if you give him that 1 year deal. So, I mean, I don't like him as a person, but I like him as a player still.
I love him as a person. So,
we're very polarized, aren't we?
He follows me on Twitter, Justin. So
yeah, he does not.
Oh, he follows me too.
He does not follow me on Twitter, but I know he listens to this show, and he's just doing this to troll me. But he follows like virtually everyone on Twitter except for me. I mean, I hate to say it, but man, wouldn't he like be nice in Texas's lineup? I know it had never happened, but
oh my God, he would be able to take all the punches that he wanted to from Rougned Odor,
right? I mean, because like he could DH and maybe play a little first base, be an outfield fill-in. I mean, I think that'd be a great landing spot. Obviously, that's not going to happen. I mean, I think he'll obviously end up somewhere. I don't think I'm willing to pay the price, though, because, of what Steve mentioned and the fact that he's getting older. He's a guy who's dealt with injuries in the past. I don't know how many games I can really, comfortably project him for. And so he's going ahead of guys like Adam Jones and Stephen Piscotty and Lorenzo Cain. And to me, I worry about, fielding a team, especially in deeper formats, the kind of formats I like to play. I don't want to, I don't want my guy who I've taken, just outside the top 100 to miss 50 games, 40 games. That can really be detrimental to an outfield spot. So I'm probably out on Jose Bautista as a fantasy player, but I hope he lands somewhere great and gives us, at least a few more amazing bat flips. All right, let's move over and talk about Jason Hamill, who is a free agent, has not found a home yet. Steve, what are your thoughts on Jason Hamill?
I think he's a solid pitcher. It's kind of a mystery to me because so many teams need guys who can basically eat innings, and he's been a consistently healthy guy who can go out there and give you a decent number of innings. Last year held opponents to like 238 average. I mean, he's not easily hittable. Strikeout rate was down over a strikeout per nine over the previous season, but he still didn't walk that many guys, get some decent ground ball rates. So he's somebody that can be effective. It's kind of a mystery to me. We thought that the Cubs were doing him a favor by cutting him loose so he could sign with somebody, and he hasn't yet. So maybe they didn't after all. But I think he'll certainly land somewhere. You look at the state of pitching for so many teams, and you know, even some of the ones, you know, even the Royals that we talked about earlier. I mean, he could certainly slot in their rotation fairly easily. So he'll find a home, and when he does, I think it he'll be an okay starter. Obviously, you know, an SP4, let's say, or 5, or something like that, and. I've got a kind of a soft spot for Jason Hamill too. He's helped me a couple of times on some of my teams. So for those reasons, I think he's definitely got some potential, and we'll just have to wait and see where he does land to determine that a little bit more precisely.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Jason Hamill for this season?
Are you talking to me? Sorry. Let's see. I mean, I don't know how Hamill can go to the Royals, because then they wouldn't be able to pitch Matt Stram as their starter. So, I mean,
no,
it's,
man.
Their position's filled. I don't know how that's possible. Anyways, I'm kind of in the same boat. I like him where he's going. I mean, he's seeing a 100 spot difference between where he went in 2016 in drafts and where he's going now. I'm certainly worried about the elbow tightness at the end of last season. I mean, he was held off the playoff roster. So, you know, the fact that he has a curve and slider mix in his arsenal and has elbow tightness is certainly not a recipe for success in terms of, you know, health. But at the same time, you know, in the second half last season, he, you know, spiked his strikeout rate to about where it's been the last couple of years. In my opinion, with the walks kind of trending up, I think he's going to be, you know, moving forward, he's going to be more of like a 4 ERA guy as opposed to like a 3.5 or, you know, 3.25 type guy that we've seen him kind of be towards over the last couple of seasons. So I think he is a little bit slightly above average and somebody that can definitely eat innings for you, but, he's not to the level he would be if he's in like a really nice, you know, National League. You know, situation. Like if he was with the Giants, I would definitely want to buy him. But you know, there's the Orioles are now in talks. Texas has been in talks as well. You know, if he lands in one of those spots, then you're looking at a situation that you probably want to avoid.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Hamill?
Is it possible to sign him to a contract for a half season? Because he always falls off a cliff in the second half. It's been a thing for the last 4 years. Like it's not a made up thing. It's an actual thing. And I think he was one of the most fortunate pitchers in baseball getting propped up by that defense, and the home run per five ball rate was suffocated last year. The elbow injury kind of scares me, but I mean, I do agree with what you guys are saying. I think he's a logical 4 or 5 starter for almost anybody at this point. The strikeout, little strikeout uptick, but I mean, it all depends on the elbow injury. We don't know, what that means for his future. But if you can get him and you can cut him in middle of July, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's a little mind-boggling that he's still out there, especially when you got teams like, you know, Seattle, which, you know, has traded away 2 starters now.
Perfect fit for the Angels, I think.
Yeah, the Angels. I mean, Seattle's starting Ariel Miranda and Yovani Gallardo now. I can't imagine he's not better than either of them. I mean, Miami's running out a bunch of guys that shouldn't be on major league rotations. So, I mean, there's a number of teams that could definitely use him. I mean, he's definitely a guy for me that I'm not – if I've got an early draft, I'm probably avoiding him until I see where he lands, because the last thing I need is for him to end up in a spot that a spot like Baltimore or a spot like Colorado and be like, oh, now I've got this guy on my roster, you know. I agree with Matt. He's kind of fallen apart the last few years in the second half. He is getting older. He's 34 years old. So this will be his age 35 season. So it's kind of the end of the career anyways. But I think if he can land in a decent spot, he might be able to offer some value if he ends up, you know, a place like Miami, National League, good pitching stadium. I would love to see a guy like Jason Hamill end up there, because I think you could get some nice value from a pick there. Let's move on and real quickly talk about Mike Napoli and Michael Saunders. Steve, what are your thoughts on these two guys without homes?
Napoli, I think the spike in power last year was like one of those league-wide things. He had almost as many home runs in 2014 and 15 as he did last year. I don't know that he can repeat this. So Mike Napoli, I can understand at 35, again, having trouble finding room to land somewhere with the crowded market. So it will have to wait. The other thing too, he does draw a walk as well. So it's hard to distinguish a lot of these guys from the others. As for the who was the other guy?
Michael Saunders.
Was able to stay healthy for the most part last year. That's been the one thing, and I don't know that he'll be able to do that 2 years in a row. So while he was on the field, he's kind of like the Rich Hill of hitting. when he's on the field, he does well, and he can contribute. I don't know that he'll be able to do that this year, and so I'm probably going to, if I'm going to get a risky player, I will do it somewhere else.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Mike Napoli and Michael Saunders?
I agree with everything on Napoli. I think he's going to have a hard time finding a job. I mean, there's rumors about Texas earlier a couple weeks ago. I don't know what happened with that. He'd be a good landing spot there, as would any of these guys. It's probably just who they can get for the cheapest price with all these options out here. Saunders is a little bit intriguing, but I think anywhere he goes is going to be a downgrade from Toronto. The contact percentage and the lefty splits kind of are a thing to look at and in question, you know, if what he can do. I mean, he did hit lefties extremely well in the first half. The second half, he dipped down a little bit, but I mean, his numbers across the board were pretty drastic in the second half. He came out real hot in the first half. Maybe he's the hitting version of Jason Hamill and Rich Hill combined.
Mike, what are your thoughts on these two guys?
You know, Saunders did have that, you know, spike against lefties, but I do remember, if I'm not mistaken, at least, that he hit like two or three of his home runs against Drew Smyly, which, you know, Smyly was erratic pretty much all of 2016. So, you know, I don't really buy into that in general. But, you know, Saunders, like you mentioned, you know, he just plummeted in the second half. I mean, after, you know, essentially after July, he just turned into a completely different player. He hit almost 300 until June. And then after he hit 199, the walk rate stayed okay. But, you know, in general, he strikes out a ton. He is pretty much injured every single season. He finally ended up getting, you know, 490 at bats for the first time since 2012. You know, he does cost nothing in drafts, so I mean, you definitely can take a, you know, flyer on him, you know, later on if you want to get yourself some power. But he doesn't steal bases. He's kind of just, he looks better by name than he actually is statistically. And especially when you look at the second half, I'm just kind of out, you know, moving forward, unless he gets in, you know, unless he just, you know, gets the ability to hit in another great environment, maybe Baltimore or something like that. But, you know, other than that, I'm out. In terms of Mike Napoli, you know, he had that sleep apnea, you know, problem for multiple years, and then he got that corrected, and, you know, and then all of a sudden he hits, you know, 34 home runs in 2016. So I'm not saying that that's the sole reason that all of a sudden he had this massive spike, but, you know, he also had 500 at bats for the first time ever in his career, you know, and he, you know, stayed healthy. So if he can stay healthy, and I think Texas is one of the leading candidates to acquire him right now, I like him. You know, I mean, he's going as, you know, what, the 18th first baseman in NFBC right now. That's certainly okay. I think that he's a lock to hit for 25 plus home runs if he does go to Texas. So that's a nice, you know, nice little sweet spot for him. Is he going to really, you know, exceed that draft slot? Probably not, because the batting average won't be that great, but he will be in a good lineup if he goes to Texas. And again, the power will be there. So I think that he'll be, you know, he's definitely the much better bet of these two players to, you know, perform this season.
He may be the better bet to perform out of these two players, but I mean, considering where Michael Saunders is going, I really like the value, because I mean, he's going as the 96th outfielder off the board, 406 overall in NFBC drafts. I mean, you're literally paying nothing for the guy, and a guy who hit over 20 home runs last season. I think there's a really good chance that Michael Saunders ends up back in Toronto.
Would you rather take a chance on Michael Saunders or Colby Rasmus next year?
I'd rather take a shot on Michael Saunders.
Colby Rasmus.
Rasmus. Hey, I just asking because he just signed. We're not even talking about him. He's on Mike's team.
Yeah. No.
How about neither? How about Jared Dyson? I'd rather go with Jared Dyson.
Yes, I would. I would much rather have Jared Dyson, but that wasn't part of this exercise. So, you know, he Saunders is going in this around the same area as Angel Pagan, who doesn't have a team. Charlie Tilson, who barely has a name. So, I mean, I think I'd rather take. You know, because of the discount, I think I'd take a shot on Michael Saunders because he costs absolutely nothing. Mike Napoli, I don't mind taking a shot on him, but I don't think he is extremely discounted in the same way. It really, to me, depends on where he ends up. If he ends up in a place like Texas, I like the fit there. You know, you do have to account for the bad batting average because he is, you know, he did strike out at a 30% clip last year. He does walk a little bit, so that's a little bit bonus in OBP leagues. But I mean, if he ends up in a really poor situation, he's probably a guy I'd want to avoid. So I think he's one of those guys too, like I mentioned earlier, that I think I'd rather wait and see where he ends up before I'm willing to pay money for him. All right. That is going to wrap us up for this episode. Steve, thank you for joining us.
Hey guys, it's been a pleasure and, enjoyed the discussion and you've given me a few things to think about as I tweak my rankings now going forward.
Why don't you go ahead and tell people again where you can be reached on Twitter and Facebook, and then again, give yourself some plugs over USA Today.
Thank you. You can reach me on Twitter. I'm generally on there pretty much all the time at Steve A. Gardner, so you can reach me there. On Facebook, you can catch me, and I'll put all of my things that I write up on there, or most all of them, at stevegardner.sports on facebook.com. And then you can also look at usatoday.com. Our fantasy.usatoday.com is our little automatic URL, so you can go there. It's easy to remember. And we're pretty much all baseball all the time now as we're saying goodbye to football.
All right.
Good riddance.
All right, Matt, why don't you tell people where you can reach what you're working on?
MD Tomp FWFB on Twitter. Still doing the team previews. Look for the Brewers piece coming out tomorrow and all that stuff. So, yeah, keep listening to Friends of Fantasy Benefits over the offseason.
All right, Matt, where you can reach on Twitter and what are you working on?
You just caught
my name's not Matt, sorry. But I got
Mike,
what you
Mike,
mean.
Whatever.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on, Steve. I'll definitely, you know, check out your labor drafts and, you know, tout wars and stuff. I'm always really into, you know, analyzing all those things, like, you know, everything else we do. So good luck in there. And
how can I forget that? Yeah, I know. That's that's in the future, too, coming up here not too long.
Yeah, small little things that you don't have to prepare for at all. I mean, they don't take any time. They don't. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike. Tomorrow. Yeah. Reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB. Check out all of our stuff on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. I will again be writing for baseballhq.com this year, so make sure you check out my stuff there. Team previews are continually rolling out, like, you know, with a vengeance at this point, so, you know, make sure you try and catch up on those. Those have been coming out every single day, and I will have my ranks out this week as well, so be sure to check it all out.
Yep, and you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. As you heard in the promo at the top of the show, if you give us a 5-star review on iTunes, we will make sure you get entered into one of our listener leagues or eligible for some of the giveaways we're going to have later on this off season. You can read everything I write for baseball on FanGraphs' fantasy side, which is called Rotographs, and then I'll also have some extra stuff on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Hope you're enjoying the team previews, which are coming out twice a day, every day for 6 weeks, except for on the days like today, where we have special guests on, like Steve, for just kind of regular in-depth analysis of other parts of fantasy baseball. So that will wrap us up. For Steve, Mike, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.